Got a car question? Give the Motor Mouse a call at 516-572-7440.
All righty. This is Motor Mouth Radio, your one-hour automotive talk show. That's Ray Guarino. I'm Chris Switzer. Still waiting on Marty Shore. We thought we had him, and we didn't. I'm not going to read off the number because we're trying to keep that phone line open.
Here we go.
Is that it? Let's see. Let's all wait. The anticipation of live radio. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on with the Motor Mouths.
Hey, it's Marty Shore calling in.
Hey, Marty.
How are you? We timed it perfectly. How are you?
I'm well. Yourself?
Oh, very well. Thank you.
Doing well. Yes, yes. How are you?
Well, I'm pretty damn good. The last couple of days have been rainy in New York, but the sun came out this morning, and it almost feels like Florida.
Well, I don't know if I'd go that far, but
Florida with a lot of dead leaves. Yeah,
yeah. 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 So yeah, well, this is what you get. This is the third season in New York, which is kind of nice. A lot of people kind of miss that when they leave. Leaf.
Yeah, leaf.
But that's
it's kind of the best time in New York. Really, is fall.
Why is that? Why is that, Marty? What do you like about it?
It's not cold enough to snow and disrupt automotive activities.
Well, yeah, the only problem I have with it is, especially days like this, I would always lose traction on those wet leaves, and I actually sideswiped a tree once because of that, so I kind of like the spring and summer for those reasons, which is kind of what we're going to talk about today.
Traction, lots of it.
Right.
See, in Florida, where I live, we don't have that traction problem because there are no leaves on the ground.
Right. And plus, if you drive a modern car with traction control, that's one way around it.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about the reason why you sat down to write a book about something that Ray and I find so near and dear.
Well, one day I woke up and said, I really have nothing to do today, so I think I'll write a book.
We said the same thing, and we got this radio show, so.
Yeah.
And I heard about the radio show, and I figured, what the hell, I do a book, I get on the radio, that's better than getting paid.
I'm glad you're looking at it that way.
Yeah.
it's interesting because for years I talked to Joel Rosen about writing a book because there really isn't anyone else who is set up to do it because I maintain most of the original photo archives and wrote so much stuff over the years that there was kind of like so much misinformation in the marketplace.
Yeah.
Guys talking about cars that never existed.
That's pretty common, I guess.
It's very common. The problem is that motion is kind of the whole motion thing started out very much as a local Brooklyn, Long Island thing.
Mm-hmm.
And like everybody, everyone in the area knew Joel Rosen, knew Motion, knew the cars at the track. But once you got to the other side of the country, back in the 60s and into the 70s, the people in California thought that we were just behind the times.
Yeah, and they still do, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but there's no reason because I remember making my first trip to L.A. It must have been in the early to mid-60s, and I was with Cars Magazine, and I was on some program, and I figured I'd get off the airplane, and there would be hot rods and muscle cars all over the street, and Ferrari,
yeah,
and Porsches, and nobody would own a regular car. Everybody had money. All the women would be beautiful. Well, the bottom line is, I didn't see a damn street rod.
Wow.
For 3-4 days in L.A., I never saw one.
Yeah, yeah.
And I came to realize, because later on I went to the first FEMA shows.
Oh, yeah.
When it was just a small thing at Disneyland in Anaheim, and it used to be called the Speed Equipment something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I went over to see Bill Thomas, who was a pretty important name in doing fuel injection on small blocks and Corvettes and road racing, and he built beautiful headers and did really nice things, and mm-hmm, he was building Nikki cars.
Oh, Nikki from Nikki Chevrolet.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
He was building the 427 Camaros for sale in the western states.
Right.
So they wouldn't have to ship them all over the place. And
right,
we were about a year into building Camaros for Baldwin, the Baldwin Motion cars, and I had driven enough of those, uh-huh, and driven in Joel's demos and whatever, and I went out to see Bill Thomas, and I he had a red with white trimmed Camaro with a 427 dual quads on it, which back in the day nobody was using.
Wow. Yeah, well, because guys couldn't tune one carburetor, let alone two. So,
and then there were two Carter AFBs on top of one another on a manifold, and
wow,
it had headers and it had a pretty serious gear in the back and mm-hmm. four speed. And Bill Thomas tossed me the keys and said, "Take it out for the day."
Nice. Wow.
So I took it out. He didn't realize that I was connected with Joel.
Oh, okay.
And
even better.
I took the car out and ran a few guys on the street, you know, just at traffic lights. And I was really disappointed. The car was, it just wasn't that much.
Wow.
And I can't tell you why, because you could put a bone stock 427 in the Camaro and it would run really nice.
Yeah, right. So you must have a real high bar of expectation. Because that's a potent combo.
Either that or they couldn't tune those carburetors as well.
Well, I think Thomas could tune them, but I had a feeling that his cars, most of the cars he built, were tuned for running top end on the freeways.
Okay.
And so when you take a car like that onto the street in traffic, you know, you got to really know the gears and understand where the torque comes in.
Right. Get those revs up there.
Yeah. So I wasn't that impressed, and you know, I came back and told Joel, and I said, you know, before I left, I drove a 68 that you did with an L88 in it. Mm-hmm. And when I saw Thomas's car, I mean, it was a nicely done car. It just didn't run much better than a 396, 375.
Wow.
But, you know, today, you know, we got to live in the time we're living in, which is now. And now all of those cars are high-dollar collector cars.
Right.
Nobody uses them. They take them to shows. If you're lucky, you see one. But guys have them hidden under covers in their garages.
Right.
And the whole purpose of the car is gone.
Exactly. How do you feel about that, Marty, about people coddling them? What do you think about that?
Well, I think one thing you lose is you really lose what the car was built for.
Uh-huh.
So you get these guys who collect, you know, Copo Camaros, the aluminum cars, the 69 cars they built. And those cars were never meant to run on the street.
Right.
They were lousy street cars. I mean, they were built for a class. It only lasted one drag racing season. And the class was gone. The car was gone.
Right.
I've driven a couple of them on the street and they're pigs. You could, you know, a 396, 375 will eat it up in traffic lights, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But now those cars never see the drag strip.
No, of course not.
They don't see the street. They're undercovers, and then they come out at auctions, and mm-hmm. they make this big fuss about one of 69, and it's one of four that was purple that had a green ashtray.
Right, right.
You know,
that's
and
yeah.
Nothing that means anything
no.
to a real car guy.
Well, you know, we could even take that further. We've spoke about it on our show a lot, where guys just with that own muscle cars and hot rods from the 70s, 60s, and 70s, they don't get, I mean, they get driven to shows, but I drove cars like that when in back in that era, and
right.
it was very common where you just pull up next to someone, you get the right look, you're going.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
and it was burning rubber and slipping clutches. It, you know, right down Sunrise Highway. That was the, you know, the mantra for the day, and that doesn't really happen anymore. I guess maybe people are getting a little more socially responsible. I don't know.
Well, I think, you know, a couple of things. That there's a reason. That there are a few reasons for this. One of them, of course, has been the shortage of good gasoline.
Sure. Ooh, yeah.
You know, if you want to, you know, I have a, it's in the book. I own that Iso Grifo that Rosen built.
Yes, yes.
And that thing is a 350, 370 early LT1 motor with some compression.
Wrapped around a nice Italian sports
right.
car.
Right. So I have to go and buy unleaded 100 octane.
Wow.
Which you can buy in Florida. I mean, leaded 100 octane, I'm sorry.
Okay, at how right. much a gallon, mind me asking?
It's, last time I had put gas in the car, it was $8.50 a gallon.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, it usually runs twice the price of high test. So the last time I put it in, high test was up around $4 a gallon.
Wow.
And so that's what I did. And, you know, if you're running an 11-to-1 car or a 12-to-1 car, you know, you have to kick back the timing so bad that the car gets lazy.
Yeah.
And so it's not fun. And the other thing is that they're building cars today that are so good
mm-hmm. yeah.
that if you want to drive a muscle car on the street today, a lot of guys just buy Shelby Mustangs or they buy the new Camaro SS.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Where, you know, it starts at 400 horsepower, and the tuner guys are putting 5, 6, 7, 800 horsepower into the cars.
And they're hardly getting their hands dirty.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's true.
You know, Marty, I'm looking at the book right now. On page 79, there's a picture of you timing the Isa Grifo.
That's Rosen.
I'm sorry. It says Joe Rosen sets up the Grifo's modified right. On the Clayton chassis dyno, that was revolutionary for its day. Not many guys had a chassis dyno, did they?
No. When he had it in Brooklyn before he moved to Baldwin, he was the only guy, except for some sports car guys.
Mm.
So there were some sports car guys that specialized in SCCA cars, and they did have chassis dynos.
Yeah.
Joe was the only guy who was into drag racing.
Mm-hmm.
That had one. When he moved to the island, he wasn't the only one, certainly, to have one.
Right.
Because in Valley Stream, you had Frankie Dominiani.
Yes.
Yes.
Good friend of ours. Good friend of the show.
Well, Frank is great, and he had a dyno, and he also had an engine dyno, and he still has them.
He does, yes.
He does.
I'll tell you, I was just at his shop a few weeks ago, and it's still in the back, sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not getting a lot of use, but it's still there, as is Frank.
Well, you know, about 15 years ago, Frank decided that it was much more fun to do cooking than to build cars.
Hey, you know, you want to stir the sauce, you want to make some... that's a lot of fun, too, you
right.
know?
And for the exception...
Let me tell you about... I can't think when, but it must have been closer to 20 years ago. He used to have birthday parties at the shop in the evening, off to the side, uh-huh. and he would bring out a cooker and a barbecue and stuff, and he used to take... I'm trying to think... Bluefish.
Uh-huh.
Gigantic bluefish and barbecue them.
Wow.
Right outside.
And onions. I mean, you can appreciate this.
This
was great Italian cooking.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he was phenomenal in the kitchen.
Yeah. I don't want to take away from your story, but one day, it was in the summer a few years ago, I walked up the driveway, and there was Frank in the back of the table under an umbrella. And he says, sit down. And he has a buck knife open. He's peeling off provolone, handing me cheese. He says, you want something to drink? And I felt like I was in like Naples. You know, but we were in the back of his shop and looking at Merrick Road in Valley Street.
All you needed was the mandolins and it'd be complete.
And the conversation was great, as it always is. And of course, you know, our other good friend Kevin Kay is right around the block from Frank. So, it's a nice, happy family.
Well, you know, that's one thing I miss about, you know, not being on the island anymore is because I used to be able to keep in touch with what's going on by stopping at shops.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like even back in the old days, Joey Jill had a shop, Speedwin, and mm-hmm. Frankie had the shop. And, you know, in the early days, I don't know how far back you go with this stuff, but mm-hmm. in Rockville Center, not that far from Joel's shop in Baldwin,
mm-hmm.
I'm guessing, I don't know, a half a mile or something on Sunrise Highway, was Bill Frick.
Bill Frick,
yes.
Right.
And when I was a kid, I used to stop off at Willie Frick's shop and watch him do Studelecks and Fordelecks.
Right. Now, that was an Allard dealership, if I remember. Well, I don't remember. I read it.
You're right. He sold Allards, and he had something else that he was doing. He was involved with Briggs Cunningham.
Oh, okay.
You know, in High Dollar, the Cunningham sports car.
Yeah.
And he was a genius.
Sure.
I mean, Frick was an absolute genius, and
yeah.
you know, part of growing up both in the Bronx where I grew up as a kid, and then on the island when I got married and stuff, was there were so many great shops that you could hang in.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah.
And then what happened is, you know, the speed shop business became a real business,
yeah. right?
And which it should have been from day one, I guess.
Well, sure.
It went from a hobby to a business, pretty
right.
much.
And
right.
you could hang out and just talk to the guys, and people would stop off with cars. And I think there's another guy who used to have a shop in Valley Stream, Tommy Felton,
mm-hmm.
Alto Automotive.
Alto, yeah. There was the 1320. There was the 1320 shop also on Merrick Road.
Right. But, and I talked to Tommy Felton every once in a while. He's retired and living in Arizona.
Uh-huh.
But he used to have Joel tune his cars a lot.
Uh-huh.
And he specialized in SCCA cars. He used to have a 55 Chevy with a nice built small block in it. And, you know, I talk to these guys. These guys are in their 60s and 70s, and Frankie is in his
80s. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I swear, it's like it was yesterday.
Right.
And we were in the shop, and we're talking about tires and gears and combinations and cams. And
yeah. Well, that's what we're trying to do, Marty. One of our goals on this show, since we have the ability and we found we've gotten into this network, is to get these people in the forefront, put them on the show, and let people hear what went on, because it is it's a great, rich history.
Right.
That a lot of people don't know the details about. You know, you mentioned a 55 Chevy. There's another guy in your book who we had on a show a few weeks ago, was Coney Island Ralph Landolfi.
Oh, right.
It just keeps, you know, just circles just keep connecting over here. It's mm-hmm. pretty amazing.
He was friendly with Joel,
yeah,
because they were Brooklyn guys.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, there were so many guys. You know, Merkel had his shop, and mm-hmm. and Sanzo Pellicane ran cars out of Merkel's shop, and you had Vinnie Tarantola with Vitar and
right, Vitar Transmission,
yeah.
Transmission, sure, and yeah. You know, body shops galore doing custom work and paint yeah. work. And in fact, one of the guys, the guy who pinstriped all of Joel's cars and did the paint trim
yep.
on them, was Gary the Brush.
And he's still around. Gary the local brush is still around.
He's still around. I talked to him yesterday or the day right. before yesterday, and mm-hmm. He is busier than ever.
We're going to be tapping him on the arm, too, to do the show, so we'll...
he has a wealth of stuff.
Oh, I know.
He's really good, and, you know, the old days were old days, but the older I get, the more people I keep on finding.
Yeah, what? That's a good thing.
Yeah,
and
I believe
we find them, and, you know, about a year or so ago, I reconnected with George Snizek from the Paces.
Right, of course. George, another good show, a good friend of our show, yes.
Right,
yes.
And the old Tasmanian Devil
yes.
has been recreated.
And, out in Arizona.
Mm-hmm. Right. And his son Scott has...
Scott is great guy.
Has a website up, a blog up for all the old guys, or the old cars.
PacesAutomotive.vox.com, I believe, or is it
right.
this? Well,
right.
you could Google Paces and you'll find it.
They're all good people, and I'll
oh,
tell
yeah.
you a funny... Just a funny little bit, because everybody, since this book came out, asked me the same question, and that is, how did you ever meet Rosen?
Mm-hmm. Good
yeah.
question.
Marty, can we find that out after we take a break?
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
That would be great, because we'd like to take a quick break here and come back. We'll find out how you, Marty Shore, author of Motion Performance, met Joel Rosen. That would be awesome.
Yeah. I'm here. Don't worry about me.
Okay. For Ray Guarino, I'm Chris Switzer. We have more of Motor Mouth Radio coming your way. Keep it where you got it.
The Motor Mouths will be right back with your car questions. Give us a call at 516-572-7440.
Quite frankly, there are better things to do with your time. Motor Mouth Radio on 90.3 FM WHPC.
There's a criminal on the loose. It could be in your area.
In fact, it could be in your backyard.
It's the Asian long-horned beetle, a black and white insect, and it's a tree killer.
Thing is, in cold weather, it goes into hiding inside the trees.
So, we need your help.
Don't move firewood. It can spread the beetle.
Buy it locally. Burn it locally.
If you want to protect the trees, it's as simple as black and white. Don't move firewood.
Learn more at beetlebusters.info. A message from the USDA.
Your car not running right? Let the Motor Mouths help you out at 516-572-7440.
Welcome back to Motor Mouth Radio, where we're talking to Marty Shore, the author of Motion Performance, Tales of a Muscle Car Builder.
Yeah.
Marty is with us right here telling some stories, and we're going to find out how you met Joel Rosen.
Well, it's an unusual story because back in the day, in the early 60s, Joel had a shop in Brooklyn,
mm-hmm.
and I was born in the Bronx, and until I got married, I never really came out to the island. And by the time I came out to the island, Joel had just moved to Baldwin. But I met Joel Rosen because he really was pretty annoyed with me. I never met the guy, and believe it or not, in 1964, I really never heard of him.
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
mm-hmm.
I didn't get to Brooklyn that much, and I didn't know people who had fuel-injected Corvettes, and that was one of his specialties.
Mm-hmm.
And so the word Motion and Rosen just wasn't on my radar. And I was at a shop, Pacers Automotive.
There you go.
Okay.
In Oceanside. And
right.
George and Charlie were working on a 63 split-window coupe that had a Hillborn-injected small block in it.
Wow.
And it was a neat car. It was a black or a Daytona blue
and
coupe with the big stacks coming up you know, through the hood and everything.
And around what year was this, Marty?
That would have been 1964, 1965.
Brand new car.
Right.
Beautiful.
It was a pretty new car. Nice. And when I saw the car in the shop and I saw George working on it, I took some pictures, and we did a little thing in Cars Magazine on the Pacers doing this Hillborn injected coupe. And that was fine. And back in those days, it took a minimum of 3 months to get on the newsstand
with
a story. So when the thing comes on a newsstand, I get this obnoxious phone call in my office. And it's somebody calling for Joel Rosen, like he had a secretary.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And the guy gets on the phone and says, Mr. Rosen would like to speak to you. He's pretty annoyed. So I said, who is Mr. Rosen?
Oh, good. How to win friends and influence people.
I didn't know him. And he didn't answer me. And next thing, Joel gets on the phone. He said, you know that story you did at the Pacers on that car? They didn't build that car. So I says, well, I thought they did. You know, it was in their shop and they were working on the Hillborn. No, I built the car.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
And it belongs to a friend of mine named Tony Morgan, who works in the freight business at JFK Airport.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my car.
Mm.
I run the car, and I tuned the car, and it was in Paces to get some Hillborn work done. So I apologize, saying I really didn't know that, and, you know, I'll see what I can do later on. He says, well, why don't you come out to my shop?
Ah.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
So I said, okay, you know, and back then, the neighborhoods in Brooklyn were pretty bad.
What part of Brooklyn was the shop originally?
I think it was in Bed-Stuy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Yeah, well.
And so I go out there. He gives me directions. I go out there. You know, those were the days before GPS and,
sure,
you know.
Yeah.
And I go to these blocks and I say, holy crap, am I going to get out of my car?
Yeah, is this a setup or what?
You know, I was driving a 61 Bonneville Coupe, a 348 tri-power car.
Nice.
You know, with Kragers on it, and it was that Honduras maroon color.
That's the one you couldn't afford to spring for the 8 lugs in the convertible on, right?
That's right. So I pull up in front of the shop. I swear it couldn't have been bigger than 20 feet wide.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And there's a little sign Motion on it, and I go inside, and I could not believe it. It was like all the way back, narrow, there was a dyno. There was no office. There was a payphone. And there was Joel and a dog.
Wow.
His big German shepherd that he had then.
That was the secretary.
That was the secretary that probably called
him. That was Franz. Well, that's prerequisite when you had a shop in Bed-Stuy back in the 60s.
You need a big dog.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this place looked like Fort Apache.
Yeah, in some respects it probably was.
Yeah, exactly.
So I apologize for the mistake, and we start talking about cars, and I recognized immediately that this guy knew his stuff.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
You can't hide that.
Yeah.
He really did. And while I was there at that time, I was building a street roadster for the magazine. It was essentially a modified MGTC body.
Mm.
With a Shelby built me a Cobra motor with tri-power.
Wow.
How did you?
Oh my gosh.
That'll make it go.
How'd you keep that on the ground?
Well, that's a story in itself, but it was built for me by S&P Automotive in Queens, Mike Sforza.
There's another name.
Another name.
Right. He did a lot of the welding for me and got the motor sitting on the rails. And then Gary's auto buddy in Seacliff actually finished the car. He built me a chassis. He did the body. He did the paint. And I took first place at the New York Coliseum Rod and Custom Show 2 years in a row.
Wow.
And it was a beautiful car. But anyway, when I was there, I saw he had every shop had a stack of old tires, you know, hanging around. And I said, hey, I need a couple of tires so I can tow my car to Gary's auto body to get the body stuff done. So he gives me a couple of tires. To this day, he still reminds me that I owe him 2 tires. I mean, he probably could have sold those tires for $3 a piece.
Yeah.
And he still reminds me I owe him the money for them.
And that's $6. Come on. In Brooklyn, you can do a lot with $6 in the 60s.
You could do a lot with a spare tire, too.
True.
In Brooklyn.
So, you know, we became friends. Then when he moved to the island, he was so handy. And because I lived in East Rockaway, and he was in Baldwin, Mm-hmm. And Paces was in Oceanside.
Yeah.
And Frankie was in Valley Stream. It was the whole area.
It's the Golden Triangle.
Wow.
And so I would be able to bring all my road test cars from the magazine to Joel, and he would dyno them for me free.
Yeah.
Do the distributor, you know, block off some of the vacuum lines for me.
Uh-huh.
And there never was a charge for this, so I had essentially my own dyno shop.
Wow. At your disposal.
At my disposal, and I gave him the publicity for it, and because of that, the California books wouldn't touch him.
Yeah.
Oh, son of a gun.
Wouldn't go near him.
I have to say, Marty, too, I'm looking at the book again at page 82 with the GTO, the 67 GTO
right.
in front of your house. I said, boy, that kind of looks the suburban, and I read that it was East Rockaway. That's where I grew up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I'm thinking, I was probably blocks from this house.
My house was on Walnut, which is right off East Rockaway Road.
Yeah, sure, okay. Yeah, I know exactly where that is. That's literally, maybe it was like a quarter mile, half mile from where I grew up, from where I lived.
Okay, so, it became so handy, and Joel would come over to my house, pick up a car, bring it to the shop, and it was
a great relationship,
and that led to doing the Baldwin Motion cars, as the book talks about and everything.
Oh, sure. You know, something else I noticed that I showed that was cluing Chris on, which I really loved, I'm looking at the car now, and on the fender, besides the Ram Air markings, it says Noise by Doug.
Right.
And over the rear wheel, it says Bite by Goodyear.
Right.
And now that's an ad man writing that stuff.
Yeah, that was your idea, right, Marty?
Well, it was my idea, but you'd have to remember what it was like in the 60s. The guys would talk about traction as bite.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And,
sure.
You know, a lot of the guys put noise on the car by hooker or something. So when I had Gary letter that car, we did Bite by Goodyear to keep Goodyear happy and Doug happy. And the big problem with that Pontiac, by the way, was that Joel made it run too fast.
Uh-huh.
Mm. Compared to what Royal Pontiac did to the car.
Of course, from Royal Oak, Michigan, yeah.
Right. Royal Bobcats.
And they hated me because I would show the time slips in the book that I ran with their car. And then after Joel did his work on it, I showed the time slips. And it was definitely better.
And that's right. You had the national exposure with Cars Magazine, which was a big player in the day, of course.
Right.
And what a great symbiotic relationship you had going there. That's fantastic. And then you were like the fuse between all of it. I mean, lighten up. You get the guys from Royal Oak calling you.
Well, I got all kinds of crap because Royal Oak was connected with Pontiac.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was Jim Wang and those guys. So
right.
I had to get the car through them.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got the car through them, they expected me to soft pedal everything they did and make it a big puff piece. And I said, hey, that's not what we do.
Mm-hmm. You know, and Marty, I want another tie-in, of course, another friend of our show who we'll have on in the upcoming weeks is Joe Oldham.
Yeah.
Who also, he wrote the foreword to your book, so you know him very well. And Joe was doing the same thing. He was taking these cars to test drive, and he would just flog them. That's what we loved about Joe is that theory that he had of just, hey, tell it like it is. If it's junk, we're going to say it's junk.
And we love that.
And he said he had threats and everything against him.
Well, the situation with Joe was that I gave Joe a platform where he could express himself without being edited.
And he did it very well, I mean.
And he did it great.
Yeah, yes. Oh, sure did.
And, I could always count on Joe, if he was going to test the car, that he would spend a couple of days at the track with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't just driving it around the corner. And Joe, of course, actually bought a Baldwin Motion Camaro.
Right, which had an unhappy ending.
Yeah, it was stolen in a few months.
He was living in Queens, what do you expect?
Right.
Those cars. And his car it wasn't like with the Stinger stripes. It wasn't an out-in-your-face car. Plus, he had the Keystone Classics on it, which was a little different.
And it was a car you used in your ads many times, isn't that correct?
It was used in, I think, 3 ads, including the Wanted poster.
Right.
That's the one. That's the famous one in my eyes.
Sure.
And there was another 2 that we used, plus some posters we did at the auto show, and by the time that stuff came out, the car had been stolen.
Yeah.
It was already gone.
So now it became wanted for real. I want it back. and that's the thing. Of course, all that stuff appears in Joe's book, Confessions of a Muscle Car Test Driver.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And he did a great job with his book. And
we pleaded him to do part 2.
Yeah.
I said, please, I couldn't stop reading that book. I just,
Well, I think that, if Joe were younger and still actively working, he might. But he really enjoys his retirement.
Can't blame him for that, right?
Yeah, that's true.
He's paid his dues.
He paid his dues. And, you know, another thing that people always ask me, you know, Baldwin Motion, the whole concept was way different than Yanko or Nikki.
Right.
Very, very different. People today lump them in the same category.
Sure.
And not that I really care. It's
and even Berger Chevrolet gets thrown in there sometimes.
Yeah, Berger, but they did nothing.
Right. They had, they had a nice catalog where you could buy stuff from.
Yeah, I mean, it was no big deal, but it was a family-owned dealership,
yes.
And they're still doing it. So that part is great. But Yanko built their thing really on the Copo cars that they rebadged.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And
okay.
They sold them through dealerships throughout the United States, and they were cookie-cutter cars. It's not that they were bad cars. They were cookie-cutter cars. And considering that the Motion cars, every single Motion car was custom-built for the owner,
yeah.
And Joel Rosen had his hand in every single ordered car.
So that must be a bear to the restorer guys that want to find a Motion car.
Right.
Or... Who else would it be? Like anybody that wants to preserve that history, it's probably hard.
It's
because of the customization between all the cars.
Yeah,
the thing is that documenting these cars, there are so many clones out there of Yankos, of Nickies, of Motions, of everybody. We didn't do a section in the book on the serial numbers and the production numbers for a number of reasons. First of all, 100% of the records are not available.
Okay.
There was a flood in Joel's office, and a lot of records were destroyed.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
So we can't do a real historical registry. The other bad part of doing that is, once you put VIN numbers out there, you're going to get people who are going to clone these cars.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
We've heard of that happening already with some people on the show.
It happens, and, you know, these guys are sleazes, and... You know, everybody says the same thing. I'm only doing it for me. I'm never going to sell a car. Yeah. Then 3 weeks later, it's on eBay.
Right. You find it.
And, you know, sometimes they say tribute, clone. Other times they don't say anything. And
I remember growing up, Marty, when a clone was a blasphemy. If you know, guys, I'm building a clone.
Right.
You'd beat the guy up in the alley. What the hell are you?
Right.
And now they're celebrated.
Well, the reason for that is, A, there's so many of them because the price of the originals are so high.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, why would you spend $300,000 to $400,000 for a Baldwin Motion Phase 3 69 Camaro when you can build your own for about $30,000?
Sure.
And now you can even go out and buy the brand new body.
Right.
And start from scratch. You know, one of the things I want to get back to from earlier, and then we're going to take another quick break, was when we were talking about driving these cars on the street, there was a doctor named Dr. Rollins who bought the last and the most expensive Phase 3 GT Corvette and made house calls in it.
Right.
I find that amazing. That is so cool.
Well, I'll tell you more amazing. The guy who owns it was up my apartment the other night, and we were talking.
Oh, cool. You know what? Can we get back to that
after
this short break again?
Yes, let's take a quick break. Marty Shore, author of Motion Performance. We will be right back right here at Motormouth Radio with Ray Guarino. I'm Chris Switzer. Keep it where you got it.
We'll be back with answers to your car questions. Give us a call at 516-572-7440. Oh, I should have said more than that thing.
If I were a car, I would go vroom, vroom, vroom.
If it's Motor Mouth's, it's WHPC.
What do your status updates say? You're learning a new language? Going all organic? Instead of typing your feelings, what if you could put them into action? By creating a network to help keep kids off the streets... In a country like Armenia, or in Honduras, what if every ounce of your being helped update the status of a person, and in turn they did the same for you? Would this be enough social interaction? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. Get interactive at peacecorps.gov/game.
Got a question? Give the Motor Mouth a call at 516-572-7440.
All righty, we're back here with Marty Shore, author of Motion Performance, Tales of a Muscle Car Builder, Ray Guarino. I'm Chris Switzer. We're going to find out. What are we going to find out again?
We were talking about Dr. Rollins' cars.
Yes, yes, the last GT Corvette.
Which was a very special Corvette, yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about it, Marty?
Yeah, sure. It was first of all, when it was done, we didn't know it was the last one because we didn't know if another one was coming. So.
Sure, right. You never know which is the last one, right?
The story is such a mind-boggling story. Dr. Rollins was a family, old-fashioned Southern family doctor in Savannah, Georgia. He loved racing, and he raced an XKE in SCCA racing.
Mm-hmm.
He owned his own, I think, B-25 and Catalina flying boat from World War II.
Wow.
He flew both of those. He had a big sport fisherman. Used to go to Baja. Car guy. He comes to New York City with his wife, and he's this conservative Southern doctor. Mm-hmm. And he stays at the Hilton Hotel on 6th Avenue and 55th Street, preparing to go to his daughter's graduation at Columbia. And then he finds out that she ain't graduating.
Uh-oh.
Oops.
That she's graduating, but she can't go to the ceremony. So there's no reason for the parents to be there to see the ceremony. Well, the doctor got so upset. I mean, he was just off the wall. Because he's so conservative, the daughter was part of the anti-war movement at Columbia.
Oh, yes.
That time in 1970.
Mm-hmm.
And she and a bunch of other people took over the dean's office and barricaded it. And the police had to drag her out.
Wow.
And so she graduated but didn't graduate.
Is daddy's daddy's little girl.
She's an attorney in New York City today. She went to law school. But anyway, the doctor got so annoyed that he had a $10,000 check with him that he was going to give her for graduation.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I can see where this is going.
He had been reading about motion in Cars Magazine. He calls Joel up and says, can I come out? I'd like to see a Phase 3 GT. So Joel was building one at the time, a customer car, and he came out, saw it, gave Joel the check. Build me a car.
Beautiful.
And so the order came in too late to be a 70. It was a short year.
Right.
And so it was a 71. When the car was finished, he flew up, hopped in it, and drove it 800, 900 miles, whatever the hell it is.
Wow.
To Georgia. Savannah. He used it to tow the XKE, and he used it to make house calls.
Unbelievable. That is phenomenal.
It had side exhaust, a 500-somewhat horsepower 454, overdrive, every option, $16,000, $17,000 car. And when he died, he left it to... He only had daughters. He left it to one of his other daughters, who was an FBI agent Bush's Homeland Security Task Force.
Wow.
Married to an FBI agent.
Uh-huh.
They're in Florida.
Oh, nice.
And they decided they really didn't want the car because, A, they couldn't afford to restore it.
Right.
And, B, they needed the money to send their daughters to private school. What happened is eventually their mother passed away of money anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But the car just wasn't their kind of car.
Yeah, sure.
They sold it, and Adam Tuchman bought it, and it's getting a body-off rotisserie restoration in New Jersey right now, and it is the most documented, most original. When Adam got that car, the only thing changed on the car was white paint to red paint.
Right.
Wow.
And it's going to be painted the original white, and Gary DeBrush will do the paint trim on it just like he did on the original car.
Nice.
And it is the last one built, it is the most expensive one built, and it is the most documented, most original, most perfect of all the 12 Phase 3 GTs.
Beautiful. Wow. Incredible.
So, I mean, and what's funny, what's great about the whole thing is that Adam is a New Yorker. He lives right now in Manhattan. He has a house that he uses in the Hamptons. And all he wants to do is restore it to absolute original perfection, show it a couple of times, and then drive it.
Good, good.
And will he be discussing that restoration with Joel?
He has already. I'm the one who is the conduit between him and the restorer. I picked the restorer who originally restored Joel's yellow Phase 3 GT, which is now in Dan McMichael's collection.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So, it's a place called Artisan something or other in New Jersey, and it's John Wallach, who used to service my Grifo, and also, before I moved to Florida, I made a big mistake and sold my 67 Big Block Roadster with side exhaust, a matching number car, and everything else. But,
wow.
You know, it's a... The book tells the story, yes. And it tells the truth. So it gets rid of all the nasty rumors and innuendos about Rosen and about building those cars, because in the day, the speed shop business was a backbiting business.
Mm. I'm sure.
They hated one another. They usually fought it out at the drag strip, and because Joel won so much, and with Billy Mitchell driving the Gen 1 car and then Dennis Ferrara driving the Gen 2 car, I mean, they owned a modified production.
They took it away from Bill Jenkins, right?
Right.
Bill Grumpy
went
Jenkins.
Back and forth with Jenkins and Billy, and then Dennis Ferrara must have set some just under 20 records with that car. It was incredible. And then Mitchell, of course, owned H Gas with the Thunderbug.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the shop owners used to lose to Joel, and then they would start spreading rumors that he's not really putting 427s in the Camaros. He's keeping the original motors and charging people.
Oh, boy. Right. Nice.
So I had to tell these people that there was absolutely no advantage to doing that, because Baldwin Chevrolet pre-sold every 396, 375 engine that came out.
Sure. So it had to come out anyway.
Right.
It had to come out, and it was instant money for it, so there was no incentive to fake a car.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, besides, it was a brand-new car from a dealership, and faking one of those cars could be, you know, a felony.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah.
So,
Marty, can you let us know, let everybody know how they can find your book?
Well, I think they can find it by putting Motion Performance Tales of a Muscle Car Builder into Google or whatever, and it'll come up. I think the best price right now for the book is Amazon.com.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also at Borders, at Barnes & Noble.
Right.
And directly from its publisher, Motor Books. And it's getting some great reviews and some great play. And, you know, guys like you guys are helping out with, you know, promoting it on your radio station. And
mm-hmm.
So we love people like you. I mean,
well, and that's, you know, we're here for you guys. We love people like you. With
Marty, we got about a minute future from Marty Shore. Any new books? Anything?
Well, I'll be very happy if I wake up tomorrow morning.
Yeah. So will we. Yeah. So bad.
I don't know. You know, it's funny. I have some public relations work that I still do. Adam Tuchman is a client. I run a Car Guy lunch group in Florida.
Nice.
We'll be putting up a website in a month or so that's an eclectic group of guys, from Ferrari Enzo owners down to street rod owners down to Corvette owners or whatever.
Cool.
In Sarasota. And I'll let you know about the website.
Please do.
Yeah, we'd like to put a link to that one on our site.
Yeah, it'll be very cool. And we have lots. I mean, really, I go by the old thing that car guys just want to have fun.
Yep.
And, you know, talking to guys like you, talking to George Schneiser, talking to Frankie Domeniani, it keeps me young and it keeps me alert and active, and going to the track every once in a while and going to shows and going to SEMA, it feels like only yesterday I was putting out the magazine.
Well, I'll tell you, Marty, if it's any consolation or any help, we'd love to have you back to talk about this more.
Yes.
In the future.
Well, I'll tell you what, when I get the website up, because it'll be a fun website that you guys will get a kick out of, I'll arrange to do another appearance on your show.
Great.
That would be wonderful.
And so I'll drop you an email, because I have your website mm-hmm. bookmarked, and I'll let you know about it. We'll talk again about things like how the feds came and tried to shut the shop down.
Yeah.
That would be interesting. Those are the things we definitely want.
Yeah. I'm sure that there's plenty of conversation
yes.
left. We look forward to that, Marty, and we thank you very much for being a guest on the show.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having me, and you guys are great, and your show is great.
Thank you, Marty. We
Take
appreciate it.
Now.
We'll talk to you real soon, we hope.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wow. Oh, my God.
I don't know. I want to go take a nap.
I'm telling you, that was a classic bit of radio, if you ask me.
That was good.
That was
Marty
good.
Marty Shore, of course, from Motion Performance.
And for Ray Guarino, I'm Chris Switzer. We just burned another hour completely. It's all over Sunrise Highway right now. We'll talk on Sunday. See ya.
Bye.